That was Jingle Smells, of course, from the Pull My Finger Volume 2, Farts, Barfs, and Belches. And now I'd like to welcome a very special guest to the program. Please welcome Chris Illuminati. Did I say your name right, Chris?
Ethan, you certainly did.
Wow. That's that's a first for me, getting your name right.
Actually, it's a first for me, too. I usually get it wrong.
Okay. So thanks for calling in tonight.
Thanks for having me. I'm really glad that this book made it onto a Christmas episode of anything. means a lot to me.
Well, it's not coming out for another couple of weeks, so it can't really be a stocking stuffer yet.
Well, actually, and this happened with the first book, Amazon doesn't like to hang on to anything.
Okay.
So while it's not available in stores and doesn't get released till January 11th, Amazon doesn't like keeping things in their warehouse. So they got shipments already, and they sent it out. And I only know that because like four people forwarded the order form to me saying, hey, I'm getting it early. So while you can get it on Amazon and you can order it now, it obviously won't come before Christmas.
Right.
But it doesn't hit actual shelves for another 3 weeks.
Very cool. Now, this is a sequel to the first book, or is this just like the first book minus 32 pages? Like,
it's actually the first book, which was just the regular, the aholology, the science behind getting your way and getting away with it. That was more of the why, like why you'd want to be an a-hole, which does take some convincing with people. The second one is called The Cheat Sheet. So it's kind of like the how you would go about it. And the reason it's called The Cheat Sheet is because we called the first one The Science. Well, not everyone was great at science, and they usually cheated.
Okay.
So this is the cheat sheet. These are all the answers about how to be an a-hole.
Now, so you wrote this entire new book, The Cheat Sheet, but you only wrote part of the previous one?
The first one was a collaborative effort. Okay. It was me and the two other authors. The second one, they asked me to do it solo. I guess I was the winning a-hole out of the group.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a compliment or if that's a put down. So I'm going to take it as a compliment, considering I wrote a book about a-holes.
Right.
If I came out as the biggest of the three a-holes, then I guess they were complimenting me by letting me write the whole book. Either that or I just had the best penmanship. I'm not quite sure.
Now, what percentage of the first book would you say you wrote?
Let's go with about 52%.
Oh, okay. So
that.
So you definitely were the
I'm the bigger shareholder of the first book.
That's great. So so do you get copies of it before it's released? I know Amazon has it. Do you have like a box of them in your house?
Yeah, I get a box for the whole publicity thing, and it's funny because you get this box, and I'm supposed to send it out, you know, for radio stations like yourself and, you know, podcasts, interviews, whatever. And everyone, you know, who comes in the house thinks it's like a community box where they can just take a couple copies. And what bothers you the most about that is because it's like, you people are friends and family. You're supposed to buy, you know.
Right.
If someone else wrote a book in my family, I'd be like, wow, I didn't know they could write. I will buy a book.
Right.
So but everyone else is like, oh, so can I take this? It's like, no, you can't, you know, it retails for $10.95. You can't fork over $11 for me. I mean, I'll tell you what, make it an early Christmas present. Just buy a copy for me. You don't have to get me anything. You know, just buy it for yourself and help me out.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we get the copies. There's nothing more exciting than getting things with your name on them.
Right.
In a box. Like, hey, I did that. So.
So do you have any left? Could you send me one?
Sure. I'd be happy to send you one.
Or should I go buy it?
You know what? I'll let you slide.
Okay.
You're doing an interview.
I'm not in your house.
No, right. Actually, if you are, I'd be scared.
Yeah.
Because I thought the doors were locked. But yeah. I'd be glad to send you one because I consider you part of the media.
So, excellent. I am a journalist. Part.
Yes, you are.
Yeah.
So I'd be happy to send you one. You just, if you show it to anyone, you must make them buy.
Okay.
How about that?
All right, yeah, that works for me.
And all the listeners out there have to buy, obviously.
Right, yeah. Well, I already told everyone that, so.
Yeah, good. I don't want them coming to my house and taking it out of the box. That would just get awkward.
So, I do a little bit of freelance. I'm wondering, how do you freelance to websites and magazines? What's your procedure?
It's painstaking. I mean, actually, the funny thing about the freelance, that's how the first book came about. They had the first two authors, and they wanted, like, a third person in there, kind of like another angle at it, and they had found all my freelance work on like Ask Men and Penthouse and stuff, and
right.
They asked me to come on as the third. So that's how I actually got hooked up with the first book. It was through my freelance work.
Oh, cool.
The best way of going about it is, I would say, in the beginning, you just got to, like, take what you can get the byline, you know, do it for free, and then once you kind of establish a name, get paid for it, and always get paid for it. But it's just, you know, knocking on doors, sending emails, and just putting stuff out there until eventually someone says yes.
Great.
It's being an a-hole. It's a very a-hole move, writing. It really is.
Is it covered in the book?
Actually, yes. It's covered in the first one a little bit, just because it's so close to me, because it's something that I do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one of the demandments, there's 10 demandments that an a-hole must follow. They were in the first book. And one of them was, an a-hole never takes the word no. And that's a lot of what writing is. It's like, you can't take the word no, because every 10th no is usually a yes. So you just got to keep pushing and pushing away. And that's, in writing, I'm sure you know, you're going to hear a lot more no's than you do yes.
Yeah,
so.
Definitely. Now, did you go to school for writing? How long have you been doing that?
Well, I went to school for communication, so I guess you could, that's a form of writing.
Yeah.
You know, it was like a cop-out degree, people say. Okay. Like, oh, you went to school to communicate. Wow, good for you. So, like, you didn't know how to communicate. I really didn't know how to communicate before I got to college. But I went to school for communications, and I always wanted to try writing, but I think with everybody else, I was kind of like, you're too scared because you don't want to take criticism.
Mm-hmm.
And then after my, like, seventh dead-end, go-nowhere job, I was like, well, this sucks, so why not try writing? Because at least I'll get pushed down by something I want to do.
Right.
You know? At least I'll get beaten up every day by something I enjoy, instead of beaten up every day by a job that I can't stand. So I didn't go to school for writing, but I eventually fell into writing.
Now, you mentioned the criticism. I was looking up on Facebook and stuff. There's, like, hate groups against you.
Yeah. And actually, the hate groups came from the first book. And I did a couple articles to publicize the first A-holeology book.
Okay.
And I did one. It was, like, how to be an a-hole to get better customer service.
Okay.
And it was, like, legit things to do, because customer service, I try not to put down customer service people, or because, you know, everyone's got to do their job, and they're just doing their job, but I tend to get stuck with the ones that are morons.
Yeah, me too.
So it was like five ways to handle them, and, like, I guess all the people that wrote in had customer service jobs.
Oh.
So this guy made up this group, and it was Chris Illuminati is a idiot Facebook group, or whatever, I forget what it was.
Okay.
Well, I got wind of it, and he only had, like, five people on there, and I told all my friends to join. So one day he's got five. The end of the day he's got like 75, and it's all my friends making negative comments about me. They're like, "Yeah, Chris Illuminati, you know, stole my lunch in fifth grade, or he, you know, he slept with my mom three times," and then I was commenting back, and I guess this guy was like blindsided. I actually wrote him a Facebook message, and he never responded. And then the group just kind of sat there, and I got it up to like 100 and something people.
Oh, and that's hilarious.
Yeah, I thought that, like, you know, no press is, you know, bad press is better than no press.
Yeah.
So let me just go and help out my own hate group, which it kind of worked.
So, in an essence, people were mad at you for being an a-hole, and by being an a-hole, you've solved the problem.
Exactly. If you just turn around the a-hole on them, they have no choice but to just bend at your will and just do it. I was hoping he would start, like, a Chris Illuminati is a really nice guy Facebook page.
Right.
And then I would definitely have no one join that.
Right.
I would want that to have one follower.
So now, if someone is acting like an a-hole, is it the best ammunition to be a bigger a-hole?
You know, this is what I say about the whole being the a-hole idea. Everyone in their life, there's some part of their life that they want to make an improvement on. That's when you should be the biggest a-hole. You know, some people aren't happy with their job. Some people aren't happy in relationships. Some people aren't happy just with life in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I say you have to just say, you know what, I'm not going to take this crap anymore, and I'm just going to start doing what I want to do, forget what everybody says, forget the negative response to it, and, you know, quote-unquote, be the a-hole, and just see what happens. You know, you could always revert back and go back to your nice guy ways and get, you know, crapped on,
mm-hmm.
or just try and be an a-hole and see what happens. So that's when I suggest, you know, trying this approach.
All right. Now, what kind of things in the book do you cover, like being an a-hole to get chicks? Is that one of them?
You know, that's one thing that I do cover. I try not to make it the whole thing. I tried to make it What I did in this book was I took a lot of the questions that people had from the first one. You know, after I wrote the first one and I went out and did signing and stuff like that, I would get emails like, okay, here's the specific situation. How do I handle this? So the second one are very specific situations, and it's like, okay, this is a situation. Here's step one, two, three, or four, how to handle it, or here's option A, B, or C, how to handle it. So some of them, it can be as easy as, you know, my boss is treating me like this. How do I turn it around to something as simple as, or something as difficult as, I actually have one in there. It's how to sell your friend's car for money. So I try and go from the normal to the absurd. And then it's got things in there that are right down the middle, like how to have the best time at a bachelor party even though you're not the groom, you know, how to get out of paying for a check, things like that.
So now, in addition to people asking you questions what they can do, have you gotten letters of people like, oh, I did this and it went great, or I did this and I got punched in the face, like any of that kind of stuff?
Actually, the one story that everybody loved from the first Aholology book that I get a lot and that I have people try, and it was an actual true story that a friend of mine did that works. I made mention of, you go, say you're going out at night and you're going to an ATM before you go out. You know how people leave the receipts around, like when they take the money out and they leave the ATM receipt?
Yeah.
Try and find the receipt with the most amount of money on it. Take it to the bar with you or wherever you're going. And if you meet a girl that night, write down your phone number on that ATM
receipt. Oh, that's hilarious.
The larger the amount of money, the more chance it is she'll call back. I had a friend of mine do that, but he lucked out. He was at an ATM and found a receipt. It had $32,000 or more.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, in the account. So that's like a gold mine right there.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wrote it down, and, okay, sorry, ladies, but the girl called the next day.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, you got a receipt with $32,000 on it, you're going to be slightly interested. I mean, if a girl handed me her number, and then the other side it said, you know, checking account, $32,000, I think I'd have to give it a little bit of a call.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely.
Even if she, I mean, of course I'm going to call. She's probably hot, and... You know, I'm not a moron, but it's even more intriguing. But my whole question, and the question people had after that, is like, okay, so suppose that happens, what's the next step? I don't know, make $32,000. You got this far, you know. You got to figure it out for yourself. I can't figure everything out for you.
Write your next number on a much smaller bank account number.
Right. Just never go to the ATM with her.
Right.
Or never pay for anything.
Or you could get her a semi-expensive present and wrap it in a low amount number receipts.
That's so a good idea. That's a good idea. Or tell her you lost everything on the stock market.
Right.
I don't know. Just do something. I actually have one of your friends have a fake hold up at an ATM.
Yes.
And take all your money. You just happen to be taking out $32,000
right
at that moment.
And then
and it's all gone.
And then you get the pity points.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I guess Nathan's hot dogs are on you tonight.
Right.
So
now, when's it not okay to be an a-hole?
You know, that's a great question. I say there's no time that it's not.
Really?
Okay. I mean, I'm sure there's a limit when you got to, like, pull the reins back and be like, okay, maybe this is taking it a little too far.
Yeah.
But, I mean, whatever situation that you don't feel like, you know, you're getting the most out of it is when you should be an a-hole. I don't think there's any time when, you know, you can go over the line, which is when you're a D-bag and you're, that's when.
So there's a difference between a-hole and a D-bag.
Yes, there's a very big difference. An a-hole usually is a person that, even though they do what they do, they're usually well-liked, they're, you know, they're connected, they have a bunch of friends. They're the person that you kind of want to be around even though they're an a-hole.
Right.
The D-bag is more of the guy where there's just nothing, there's just no redeeming qualities about him.
Mm.
Like, he takes things a little too far, he kind of, like, you know, he takes it that step over where you kind of get turned off by the way he is.
Hmm. So, now, has there been any times where you stepped over the line, you think, and you walked into D-bag territory?
Me, personally, I try to, like, rein it in. I know a bunch of friends and people who have really, you know, kind of stepped over the line, and it's all about, it's all a thing of one-upsmanship where, you know, it wasn't so much being an a-hole, it's just that, like, they tried to get the upper hand, and then you go so far that the upper hand is just being outlandish.
Right.
So you kind of get into that murky area, but, you know, personally, nothing that I've done. If there is one thing that this book and the first book helped me out with, like, there was parts of that I thought of my life that did need an improvement, and I didn't realize it until I wrote the book. And it's
okay.
Kind of like being an a-hole to a customer service person. At first, before I wrote the book, like, I would kind of, like, you know, cater to them. It's like, they're supposed to be helping me out, and I'd be like, okay, you don't have to do that, you don't have to do that. And then I realized, what am I doing? Like, they're supposed to be helping me.
Right.
And then you kind of like, you're the jerk. In fact, the other day, I was a jerk with my cable provider, and I was an a-hole so much that eventually they gave me what I was asking for. It took,
wow.
It took three people, and it took 20 minutes, you know, waiting.
Yeah.
But I eventually got what I was asking for. And it wasn't anything crazy. It was just, you know, it was just something that I wanted that, you know, that I knew they could do, but they were just saying no. So I just
right.
kept going till someone said yes.
Now, is there a rule in the book or in your life, should you never be an a-hole to a food service person?
Only after you've gotten the food.
Okay.
Yeah, I usually live by that rule, too. It's like,
okay.
I do this sometimes, too. I'll go to a restaurant, and I'll order something, and I'll get food, and it's completely wrong, and I'll eat it because I'm not sending it back, you know?
Yeah.
Unless it's something I'm like, you know, I'm going to be sick from eating.
Right.
You know, I'll be like, you know, I wanted a burger. They gave me chicken fingers. I'll deal with it, you know? So I don't mess with people that touch my food or make my food.
Right,
that's
okay.
A rule that everyone should live by.
Is that specifically in the book, or is that just a given?
You know, I think that should be just an overall rule that everyone follows. You know, you should really know better not to mess with people that mess with your food or that can touch your food.
Right. I totally agree.
Just, you don't want to.
I work
even if it looks good. What's that?
I work in food service, so I know.
Have you ever messed with anyone's food?
No.
You can be honest.
No, I actually haven't. Because I work at Panera, so it's like I'm out in the open, so you can't really get away with anything like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that is true. That you know, I notice a lot of places are more out in the open now. I don't know if that's just the way places are designed or if they just want people to say, hey, look, I can see what they're doing to my food.
Right. Yeah, it makes people feel better, I guess.
Yeah. I'm not I don't know how I feel about Panera. I've been there a couple times.
Oh, yeah?
And it might just be my local Panera. I don't know. I know the Wi-Fi is great or something, but I'm not there to eat the Wi-Fi.
Right.
So, I don't know. It might be my local one's always busy, and that might be the problem.
Oh, yeah, probably.
So, you know, the food's been fine, but, like, every time I go there's, like, a million people, and I just get aggravated.
Well, so. There's a lot of things you can get by being an a-hole there. I can't tell you about them, but...
Maybe you have to tell me off.
I'll tell you off the air.
Okay. You can get a lot of things at any restaurant by being an a-hole.
Right.
I mean, you just gotta push enough.
Yeah.
You know? But just make sure you do it, you know, after you get the food or, I don't know, maybe after the food's in your hand or takeout or something.
You know,
or,
it doesn't stop people. Like, I've seen people eat an entire salad and then come back and be like, this isn't what I ordered. And then you have to make them a brand new one, and it's pretty annoying.
See, I think those people, they know they have the system beat, so they're just going to go ahead and just try. Probably because it worked once before.
Right.
So why not try it again?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's probably what they're doing. Would I suggest that? I mean, come on. Don't give the people behind the counter a hard time. It's just, you know, they're probably having a crappy enough day as it is.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't really need your... guff. I try to not. There's certain jobs that I try not to be an a-hole to people. You know, customer service, I'll be it.
Yeah.
because I know you could do half the things you want me to do. But I try. You know, waiters, waitresses. You know, guys pumping gas, things like that.
Yeah.
People, manual workers. I try because it's. You know, because I've had a couple of those jobs and I've woken up and been like, oh god, this is the worst thing I could possibly do right now. So I always tend to feel bad for the person, so I don't. You know, try not to mess with them.
So what about telemarketers? Like, are you someone who messes with them?
You know, I try to. Just because you know what the job is going in and you still agree to it. It's not like you're working a job and all of a sudden they go to you and say, hey, guess what? Now you have to call people and solicit them at home.
Right.
You know, and you know, the worst ones are starting to be the people that are trying to get donations.
Oh, really?
They just don't stop. Yeah.
I haven't gotten any of those, thankfully.
Yeah. And even the do not call, like... The some places can get away with calling the do not call because they're calling on behalf of, like, the Policeman's Benevolence Association and stuff
like that.
They get away with that stuff. But I've had a lot of people call in and you know, call and say, would you like to donate to this? Would you like to donate to that? And then, no, I wouldn't. But thanks. What are you doing? So they don't. You know what? Telemarketers don't bother me as much as spammers do now.
Oh, yeah.
Spammers just kill me.
But spammers are usually just like computers. Like, you can't even get mad at computers almost.
You know what? I don't even mean the automated, you know, I've got a print that wants to give you $1,000 spammers. I'm talking about the ones where, like, you're all of a sudden on some mailing list.
Oh yeah.
For something and you know it's just someone that it's some other company that sold your email address.
Yep.
but there's like no way of getting back. And then it's like, oh, click on here, click here to unsubscribe, and you unsubscribe, and there's like 80 options of unsubscribing.
Right.
And you're just like, you know, so I just take those things and take those emails and like sign them up for other things.
So. That's a good idea. Oh, I'd never thought of that.
Yeah, or you just send it. You send it and spam it to other people that you know will freak out. Yeah, there's always other ways of being an a-hole to get it.
Right.
You know, if you piss other people off by, you know, sending spam to them, if it gets another person in trouble, it's well worth it.
Yeah. So now, you recently had a kid. I don't know how recently. I just know that you had a kid sometime.
9 months.
Nine months. Wow, great.
Yeah. He's definitely changed things. I mean, don't let anybody fool you into thinking that you have a kid and everything's the same. It's not. But it's kind of funny. We actually have a shirt for him. We're going to bring him to a couple book signings, and someone actually found a shirt. And I'll tell you where they found it, and you're going to go, obviously. They found it on the Seaside Boardwalk in New Jersey.
Okay.
And when I tell you what the shirt says, then you're going to go, okay. It's black with white writing. It's almost exactly like the book. It's black, white writing. It says, If you think I'm an a-hole, wait till you meet my dad.
That's excellent.
Perfect for him. But, you know, there's kind of things that I don't want him reading or knowing about for a little while. So I put them on the top of the bookshelf so he can't get to them.
That's good.
For at least a little while. Once he can reach them, he can read them. You know, I've got some graphic novels up there that he can't get to. I've got some of my writing up there. I got some of my Penthouse articles. Once he can reach it, I'll let him read it. But it's definitely changed some stuff.
Yeah. Now, at what age do you think a person can first be considered an a-hole? What age do they have to get to?
I'll tell you what. if you asked me a week ago, I probably would have said maybe third grade, fourth grade.
Okay.
But I saw a video online the other day, and I don't know if you saw this. It was a little kid who was opening his Christmas gifts from last year, and he opened it up, and it was two books.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I saw that.
And he flipped out. And while he's flipping out, there's a brand new Wii sitting right next to him.
Oh,
and he's like, books! Books are not for Christmas! And he, like, just freaks. That kid probably was about 2-3 years old. So I've now changed my mind that a-holes could come as young as 2, possibly 1. I mean, it just, I was like, this kid, you know, I was like, the line forms behind me to slap this kid. And I'm first, whoever wants to come along with me, because he needs it. So I'll say 1 to 2 years old is the youngest.
Now, if your kid starts being an a-hole, would you encourage it? To a point, or would you kind of stop it before it gets
Is he being an a-hole to me or other people?
I don't know. Maybe
if it's to me, I will stop it right now.
Right. What about like? All right. So like, what if a kid at school like is mean to him? Like, can he go above and beyond? Are you okay with that?
Yes, I will. You know what? I'll try not to resort to fists.
Okay.
I will help him other ways. You know, I'll be like, hey, let's help this kid develop an eating disorder, or let's, nah, I wouldn't do that. Even I wouldn't do that. But, you know, I would teach him to kind of handle things with his mind and his mouth before he got to his fists.
Yeah.
Although, we just went to the doctor today, and he's, like, in all the higher percentiles for, like, size and weight.
Oh,
so
yeah?
maybe his fists will be the way, or maybe no one will ever pick on him, you know, because I'm not as tall in stature. I'm only like 5'6", 5'7", in good boots.
Mm-hmm.
And if this kid has a chance, like I always pictured, who's the comic book villain where it was like the brain on top of the head, you know,
I know who you're talking about.
It was like a huge body and he was the brain, like maneuvering the things. That's what I'm going to be. I'm going to be like on top of my son's shoulders. I'm like, see that guy over there? Go knock him out. or let's run through this wall right now. So if he's big enough. But, yeah, I'll teach him as a kid to kind of, because that's how I used to get by things. Like, I'd either, if people were trying to pick on me, I'd either turn it around on them or I'd just pick on myself until it became no fun for them.
Right, yeah.
You know, they'll be like, oh, yeah, Illuminati, you got boogers hanging out of your nose. I'd be like, oh, you should see my fat mother. You know, so I would get around it that way. So I would teach him, use his mouth first.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely good. Now, have you ever done any stand-up or comedy? Or have you just been doing the comedy writing?
You know, I've just been doing the writing. There was a time when I was younger that I wanted to try stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll admit I do have a notebook of stuff written down should I ever give it a shot. But, you know, I just have such respect for people that do stand-up comedy because, you know, if I sit there and write a blog and I think it's funny or not funny, I send it out there. Some people will laugh, some people won't, but I won't really know unless they, like, comment or say something
right.
on it. But with stand-up, it's so immediate that, like, I don't know if I could handle it, you know. Like, I'm used to making people laugh and, like, you know, at a dinner party or something like that, but if I stand up in front of a stage and I crack a joke and no one laughs, I don't know, I'll just be like, and it, you know, it just might phase me forever.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things that I would definitely try, but I give people huge amount of respect. Even the people that suck at it, I give them even more respect because have to know they're not funny and go up there in front of, you know, hundreds of people. Whereas the guys that know they're funny, you know, it's easy for them. So I would like to try it, but I respect people that do it.
So you don't think you're ever going to try it? Or maybe a possibility?
You know what? I'd give it a shot. Maybe, you know, maybe I could try a couple of these jokes at some of the book signings. You know, go up there. You know, try my chops and see if anybody laughs. And then if not, how about you? Do you do stand up or anything?
Yeah, I do stand up.
And how long have you been doing it?
Just about 3 or 4 years.
See, now there's a thing where you basically have to go on stage and do your thing, and then you sometimes have to be an a-hole depending on the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure you've had times when you know, just had the crowd not be into it for whatever reason, and you got to, you know, dish out. Do you have any good comebacks or anything?
You know, I haven't really had that many heckles, so.
Okay.
I've been doing off and on for about 3 or 4 years. I haven't been doing it too consistently, but, really never too many heckles. But I know, like, at first, the big thing was, like, doing a bar show especially, getting the audience to listen to you. That was the hard part.
Oh, yeah.
It was just actually getting their attention. But then, I haven't had too many problems once I have attention.
Right.
But. So, now, do you have a schedule together for your book tour?
Yeah, actually, I'm, on January 27th, I will be at the UPenn Barnes & Noble in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be doing signings. I'm doing a signing in Princeton, New Jersey, Barnes & Noble on February 10th. And then the big one, which you can find on Facebook, I'm doing a... it's like a dual event. It's going to be in New York at the National Underground. It's
okay.
It's on Houston Street, and that's on February 19th. And I'm doing a book reading / signing, and then a friend of mine is playing with his band.
Oh, cool!
It's the name of the band is RMDB. It's just two guys, and they're actually really great. And because I couldn't do one of those things where, you know, a book signing at a store is one thing because you're sitting there and everyone's, you know, it's a crowd where, you know, they're there to either buy the book or see you or meet you or whatever.
Right.
But to do like the kind of the opening at a bar, like I didn't know what I would do for 2 hours. You know? Yeah. You got to rent the bar for 2 hours. What am
right.
I going to do for 2 hours? What am I going to read the whole book?
Yeah.
So it's like, okay. So I asked my friend, I'm like, how about you play music? I'll occasionally go up there and read and we'll do it that way. So that's on February 19th. You can actually find that on Facebook. If anybody can go out there and friend me on Facebook, it's just my full name, Chris Illuminati. I'm all about people friending me, and
oh, cool.
You can find it somewhere on my page, and then just invite yourself and show up.
Now, I'm wondering, have you ever done like a lecture or anything about the same kind of subject matter?
Actually, I didn't do it about the Aholology book, but I did a lecture at my alma mater, Rider University, which is in Jersey, last spring. A friend of mine who's a professor there asked me to come in and talk about the whole, you know, process of writing a book and freelancing and stuff. And it's funny because you talk about this kind of stuff and they're like, oh, what book did you write? And then you say it in front of a crowd. And they're like, So that part was kind of fun. But I have done lectures and stuff like that. And actually, I was asked to, it's not set in stone yet, but I was asked to speak at this writer's convention at Princeton University.
Oh, wow.
They're just not sure.
Right.
The subject matter is fine, but they're
right.
like, can you keep it clean? And I'm like, trust me, I can keep it clean.
Yeah.
You know, so that's kind of in the air. That's in the spring.
Well, that'd be really cool.
I've always wanted to do stuff like that.
Now, would you consider doing like, in addition to like a book tour, maybe even a speaking tour?
I would definitely love
something?
To do that. Like, I love like the whole David Sedaris NPR kind of thing.
Right.
Or actually another favorite of mine is Mike Birbiglia.
Oh, I love him, yeah.
Yeah, who just goes out, you know, and it's part of it's his stand up, but part of it's just sitting there telling stories and, you know, the stuff from his new book. I would love to do stuff like that. But the whole thing with that is, you know, the writing and the time, you know, when you have a regular day job, you know, I don't know if I'd do a tour for the Ahoology books, but if I ended up writing something else, I would love to do stuff like that. Like, I like talking to people. I like one of the things that I enjoy the most is talking to people about how to get into writing, and because, you know, I got into it basically by going out there and, you know, putting my name out and trying everything and writing for everything. And some people, I get those, and I get the email once a week, like, how do you get into writing? So instead of sitting there and writing out the email, I'd rather just talk to people about it. You know, just like, you know, do this, sign up for this, try this. And I like helping people out in that way. So I would definitely do a lecture kind of thing.
That'd be really cool.
Well, if you know of anything, let me know.
Yeah, I could try and get you one at this at SUNY Albany here.
Great. I'd love it.
It'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Well, so the book comes out. You said
January 11th.
I think it said January 14th somewhere online. Am I screwing something up?
It's not you. It's Amazon. Amazon's a pain in the butt with changing things. Okay. So like when the publisher first put it in, you know, once you make something in Amazon, it's like set in stone, and to get them to change it takes forever. So like when they first were talking about the book, like I guess they were looking at dates and they just put in January 14th. It comes out the 11th.
Okay.
Yeah, the 14th is a Friday. No new releases come out on Friday.
Right.
So it's the 11th. That's the day that it comes out, and it's available anywhere. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders, wherever. It, the first one was actually in Urban Outfitters. I think the second one's going to be. They're trying to put the second one in, like, Spencer Gifts and things like that.
Oh, cool.
So once January 11th hits, you'll probably see it a lot of places.
Great. I'm really looking forward to it.
Thanks. This one I wrote in a whole different level. I actually wrote this book right when my son was 2 months old.
Okay.
So I had a full-time job. I had him at night. I had, you know, because I'm a stay-at-home dad. So I was doing all these things and then writing this book. And I was, like, fueled up on coffee and, like, no sleep pills and no sleep at all. And I wrote some crazy stuff in this. So it's funny. It's practical. It's funny. It's something you could hand off to people. I call it a bathroom book because you could read it in the bathroom, put it down, pick it back up. And it's a lot of fun. And I really hope everyone picks it up and enjoys it.
Great. Now, and just running real quick, how many times have you read your book, would you say?
Are you counting editing?
I don't know. I guess maybe, do you go through the whole thing when you edit, or do you do it kind of like
chapter
by chapter?
Yeah, you got to go through the whole thing.
Yeah, but do you go through the whole thing?
Oh, how do I do it personally?
Or do you do it like page by page kind
of thing? You know what? I try. This is what I usually do, and this is an odd process to do it. So I'll just sit down and I'll write everything out that I want to get out of my head.
Yeah.
So I'll go pages and pages and do it, whatever, and I'll do it over a couple days.
Okay.
Then I'll take it and I'll open another brand new document. And I'll take the first paragraph, and I'll cut it and paste it into the new document so it's the only thing there.
Okay.
And then I'll work on that paragraph. And I'll go, okay, I like that. And then I'll go, and then I'll get the next paragraph.
Huh.
And then once I've finished all that and I have the finished thing, I'll go, okay, this is the finished thing, and I'll hand it in and whatever I got to do. And then they came back to me with the edits, so I had to read it all over again. So if we're counting, like, edits and actually sitting down and reading the hard copy of the book, which is what I'm doing now, because it's amazing. You know, you write a book. Like, I got finished writing this book in June, like early June, mid-June.
Okay.
And then you go and do so many other things, and now I go back to the book, and I'm like, wow, I wrote that? Or, wow, I said that? So I'm reading things, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty funny. Oh, wait, I wrote this. So right now I'm actually reading through the hardcover book, the book in my hand. So I'd say by now, at this point, I'm probably on, like, reading number 6, 7,
wow,
something. So, but the first time of the physical book. All the other times were like on a computer screen, like squinting.
Now, when they send back the edits, is it just grammatical stuff, or do they make you remove passages and sentences and words?
You know what? They were really great with this one.
My
publisher, Adams Media, they're really good with, like, just letting me do my own thing. They, you know, I guess they figured the first one did well, this one will probably do well. There was a couple things they wanted me to change.
Yeah.
Just because of legal issues. Actually, I'll tell you what, I'll read you. This was funny that they added this onto this book.
Okay.
And it's right underneath the copyright. Where is it at? Here we go. certain sections of this book deal with activities that would be in violation of various federal, state, and local laws if actually carried out. We do not advocate the breaking of any law. The authors, Adams Media, and F&W Media Incorporated do not accept liability for any injury, loss, legal consequence, or incidental or consequential damage incurred by reliance on the information or advice provided in this book. This information in this book is for entertainment purposes only.
That's hilarious.
So in case someone thought they were going to sell their friend's car for money, you know, don't do that. But that funny little disclaimer kind of tells you what's in the book.
Yeah. You know you've written a good book if they put a legal disclaimer like that on there.
Yeah. So, and actually one thing that I did, I listened to a ton of podcasts.
Okay.
And I listened to the Nerdist podcast.
Mm-hmm.
If you're familiar with it, Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, I love him.
And, yeah, and he had on Paul Scheer, I believe that's his name, from Human Giant,
yep.
The League. And he said when they were doing Human Giant, and a lot of people do this on TV shows, if they have a skit or something they write that they think is kind of questionable and they think that someone's going to come back to them and say, you know what, we can't do this, they'll write that skit. But then they'll go and write another skit that is so ridiculous and stupid and crazy that it would never pass through anyone's, you know, office ever. So they'll go, you cannot do this. Okay, well, can we do this? Okay, fine. I tried to do that a couple times with this book.
Yeah.
Like, I'll write something that I thought was really great, and then I would write something so ridiculous, and they'll go, you can't say this. I'll go, okay. But I really got in what I wanted to do, so I took that advice. On this one.
So in essence, you were being an a-hole to get in stuff about how to be an a-hole. That's excellent.
Exactly. Actually, the one that I do remember was I made a joke about Boy Scouts and Boy Scout leaders.
Okay.
And that was the crazy out there one. And they're like, you can't say this. And I'm like, all right, I can't say that, but can I say this? And they're like, okay.
Was there any out there ridiculous stuff that they let you keep?
Actually, the Boy Scout thing in general was kind of ridiculous. It was... The joke was, it was like, I was like, and as the Boy Scouts always say, and you think I'm going to say be prepared, and I said, as the Boy Scouts always say, are you sure doing this is going to get me a badge? And I think that was like the okay edit.
Yeah.
But like how I said it the first time was like, I don't know, it was really... outlandish. And they're like, well, you can't say this because it's libel or something like that. I'm like, well, there's a lot of articles in the paper that say it's true. So I was like, okay, well, fine. So that was a little, that was one of the more. But other than that, they really let stuff fly and then put in that disclaimer.
That's so great. I'm so excited to read this. So the A-Hole-ology, the cheat sheet, put the science into practice in everyday situations.
Yep.
Available January 11th.
Yep.
And you get it on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Borders. You can get it early now on Amazon.
Yes, you can.
And we can check out your website, Chris Luminati,
Chrisilluminati.
Do people screw up your name since it's an I and then two L's? Does it look like it's like...
You have no idea what they do. The funniest one, and I really wish I saved this, I was living with my parents when I first moved out of college. And I guess the people just gave up on my last name, so I got a piece of mail that said Chris Lee, Chris L-I. It's like they gave up. They're like, you know what, screw it. And it's really not that hard of a name. It's just like it's Illuminate, except Illuminati.
Yeah.
But I get all the crazies, though, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Oh, on Twitter and Facebook, they're like, how could you support the Illuminati, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, it's my last name. I have nothing to do with a cult. I don't know
what. Oh, there's a cult?
Oh, yeah, the whole, like, Illuminati, Freemason, you know, the Tomb Raider thing.
Lara Croft?
Yeah. Did you ever see, it was the number two, Angels and Demons with Dan Brown.
I don't know.
I'll
have to look it up.
Go Google it, and then you'll see all the stuff I'm talking about, and you'll see how Jay-Z's involved. It's crazy. It's crazy. I have people that, you know, I get a Twitter once a week, they're like, how could you believe in the Illuminati? I'm like, dude, it's my last name. Calm down. Does everyone named Mason, are they a Mason? It's like, don't be stupid.
Now, so. I saw, like, some guy from Twitter was reading your book or something, and it made some list, like, people list.
Oh, yeah, actually. That's actually one of the things that put the first book really over the top as far as, like, it was Kellen Lutz from Twilight. I'm sure all the Twilight fans know who the hell that is.
And I have no idea.
Yeah, he's also, like, a Calvin Klein model kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
so this
I know him from that, of course.
Exactly, yeah. You know him from his cross shots
yes.
in GQ. He actually, last time the first book came out, decided to take it and go read it up in a tree in the park, which, I mean, who doesn't read a book like that? The natural
exactly.
light, the squirrels help out with the big words. I mean, so he was up in a tree reading it, and he got snapped by the paparazzi. And when he got snapped, you could see the title of the book. So it ended up making TMZ.
Wow.
It was in OK Magazine, and then it was in one other pretty big like gossip. I think it was on Perez Hilton.
Okay.
And then all those other little places picked up on it. And then, like, maybe a month ago, People Magazine ran this photo gallery, and it was like celebrities reading or something like that, because, you know, we all know they can't read.
Right.
So, and he was one of them again, and the book was highlighted again.
So now, did you guys hire him to do that?
No.
Really?
And you know what? Thinking back, I'm like, damn, that's a good idea. I'm like, I wonder how much celebrity. Like, I wonder if I could, like, you know, put the book between, like, Kim Kardashian's butt cracks and
right.
get, like, you know, for 10 grand, someone can snap her, or Coco,
right.
Ice-T's wife, she could quit pick it or something. But if I had the means to get to a celebrity and the money, I would definitely do that. But no, I didn't. I had nothing to do with that. Tell you what, though, I'm a hell of a Twilight fan now.
Yeah?
Yeah. I read all his stuff, or I watch all his stuff, or whatever. Whatever he does.
I think
buy all his underwear.
You need to send him one of these free copies that you have.
Yeah, I should. I don't know what tree he lives in. But
yeah.
If I can find the address for that, I'll be glad to send him one. Kellen, if you're listening, I would love to send you the second book. If you could just find me on Facebook.
I'm sure he's listening.
I'm sure he is. I'm sure he's driving through Albany right now. On his way to wherever he lives.
Yeah, to his vampire cave or cemetery or whatever they do.
He's going somewhere and he's listening. It's like, oh my god, I'm gonna get a book. I can't wait to read it in a tree over Christmas.
Christmas tree. That's excellent.
Yeah.
Chris, thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling in, man. This was great.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, can't wait to see the book. You've got a couple other websites. You've got an A-holeology website.
Yeah, it's the A-holeology, but actually spell out A-hole with the A and the S and S.
S and then the word
hole.
Yeah,
the holeology, right. .com. That'll take you to the website. You can find me on Facebook, Chris Luminati, or Twitter, at Chris Luminati. And everyone's free to email, say hello, do whatever they want. I'm a pretty open kind of person. Unless you're going to yell at me about the whole Illuminati thing, then I'm just going to block you. So.
Awesome. Chris, thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Ethan, thanks a lot, man.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Chris Luminati, and that was great. A-holeology, the cheat sheet, is going to be out January 11th. You can get it now on Amazon.com due to a mistake, but it sounds great. I can't wait to read that book. I'll have to get the first one as well.